don't even know if we've mentioned on the show, but this guy who's the mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez, has decided he also wants to run for president in 2024 in the Republican primary. I most knew him because he's like really embraced crypto for Miami. That's been like kind of his thing. Apparently, the Miami mayoralty is kind of a very weak position. It's almost like more of a just a title in name only. There isn't a lot of power.
The King of Miami.
Exactly, which I guess is an important title for what it's worth. But he was on Hugh Hewitt's radio show, and he got asked a question about whether or not he would be talking about the Chinese Uyghur Muslim minority and their treatment. But, you know, some of that context was left out. He was just asked, like, will you be talking about the Uyghurs? It didn't go too well for him. Take a listen.
Will you be talking about the Uyghurs in your campaign?
The what?
The Uyghurs.
What's a Uyghur?
Okay, we'll come back to that. You got to get smart on that.
Ooh. What's a Uyghur? Oh, that's so bad. And it really reminded me, and I don't think I'm the only one, of how it seems like every presidential election cycle, there's at least one of these moments where someone who fancies themselves the next commander in chief fails to grasp even the most like basic information about, you know, our foreign policy or what's going on in the world or what their own plans are. So we put together a little, thanks to producer Mac for putting together a little bit of a trip down memory lane of some of the worst brain fart moments for political candidates over the past number of years. Let's take a listen to that.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it. Got it.
Okay.
It's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
EPA?
EPA, there you go. No, okay.
Let's talk deposition.
Seriously? Is EPA the one you were talking about? Or?
No, sir.
You can't name the third one?
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce, and let's see. I can't. The third one, I can't. Sorry. Oops.
So you agreed with President Obama on Libya or not?
Okay, Libya. President Obama supported the uprising, correct? President Obama called for the removal of Gaddafi. Just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing before I say, yes, I agreed. No, I didn't agree. I do not agree with the way he handled it for the following reason. That's a different line. I got to go back. See, got all this stuff twirling around in my head.
Do you agree with the Bush Doctrine?
In what respect, Charlie?
The Bush, what do you interpret it to be?
His worldview?
No, the Bush Doctrine, enunciated September 2002, before the Iraq War.
I believe that what President Bush has attempted to do is rid this world of Islamic extremism.
The Bush Doctrine, as I understand it, is that we have the right of anticipatory self-defense, that we have the right to a preemptive strike against any other country that we think is going to attack us.
Yikes. The Gary Johnson one, what is Aleppo? I love the way that he has like a little bit of an attitude about it. Like, how dare you ask me about this thing no one clearly knows about, Aleppo, at a time when this was really central to what was going on in terms of political news. But what did you make of Suarez's mess up here?
You know, there was a Politico article this week about how the Republican field ended up getting so crowded that really interested me, because what a lot of people on the right have been talking about in sort of conservative DC circles for the last, you know, 5+ years is basically how do you avoid a 2016 situation? And I'm not weighing in to say that you have to avoid a 2016 situation. I'm sort of two minds. I think it's great that you can field a bunch of candidates from a bunch of different parts of the party and have them duke it out for public support in this like high profile arena for the presidential primary. Like, to an extent, I think that's better than having Martin O'Malley, Bernie Sanders, and Hillary Clinton, and what, Jim Gilmore? I mean, who else? No, he was Republican.
Webb.
Yeah, Webb ran.
Yeah.
And, like, so Okay, but at the same time, it's also very clearly for some people not about becoming president of the United States. And if it is, and they actually think, despite their obvious long shot odds, that it's worth them becoming president of the United States, it's just using our politics, using voter resources, using donor money for vanity projects. And I mean, I don't know that every donor, even like super wealthy ones, understand that. I don't know if Suarez has any money, but clearly it's just a profile raising thing because they've seen it happen again and again in these wide open primaries. I mean, it happened with Dems in 2004. People were able to raise their profiles. Bill Richardson, like this is like a real thing now.
Yeah.
People have learned, and it's not just Republicans, but it's really Republicans in the last 10 years. So I think Suarez is just doing that. And it's really unfortunate because it's a total waste of everyone's time. It's not actually contributing anything meaningful.
Yeah, there's so much to be gained from just positioning yourself to be like a media figure, you know, like right. a conservative media darling or like a frequent podcast guest. You know, there's a lot to be gained and frankly, not a lot to be lost from just being like, sure, I'll throw my hat in the ring. Like, I guess the thing that you could lose is like your dignity as Francis Suarez found out when like this is really the only thing anyone now knows him for is going to be this moment of, you know, just not knowing a basic fact that many, many people know and that you certainly should have some idea of if you are serious about being commander in chief. I feel similarly to you, Emily. It's like I am all for if you feel like you have something to say and you genuinely feel like, all right, even if I think the path to presidency is really challenging, like I have something I can contribute to this conversation mm-hmm. that's not being said.
Right.
I can put pressure on the top contenders to come around to my view a bit more. Ron Paul's a great example. Yeah. Mike Gravel is a great example, mm-hmm. right? Then yes, do it, even if it looks like a suicide mission.
And that's why Bernie ran, by the way. So
that's,
like,
right.
that's exactly what happened, and
that
it worked.
That is correct. He thought, he didn't really think he was going to have a shot at winning. You know, his campaign took off in a way that I think no one really expected. But he felt that there should be a left challenge to Hillary Clinton to put pressure on her. And obviously, you know, worked out and transformed the country in a lot of ways. But even if you don't have that path to, like, Bernie stardom, it can be important to have those voices or issues that aren't being heard or aren't being talked about in a certain way. So I don't want to minimize that whatsoever. But, you know, for some of these people, it's like you're not saying anything different. Like you're just saying the same thing that everybody else is saying. Your politics are, you know, they're not challenging anyone. They're not raising new issues. It really either seems completely delusional, which I do think that some of these people are egotistic and delusional and narcissistic yeah. enough to actually imagine that they really have a shot at it. So, and I would like to inhabit that mind for a day and like know what does that feel like
right,
to be
right.
that like super confident and anyway, and just have that level of self-delusion. I would like to know what that is like. Maybe people out there will be like, you already have it. Anyway. So that's one possibility. The other is, yeah, they just want to, like, you know, get their Fox News gig or get their podcast or,
yeah.
you know, raise their media profile. And I don't know which category Suarez falls into, but I don't think it's really particularly helpful. And this is one of the downsides of, like, the new media ecosystem is so much of our politics is about vibes and about branding
yeah.
and not about substance. That it's like there's no barriers and there's no real downside to just taking this particular path.
Well, and for me, it ends up feeling like so many different things these days where you just have people picking at the carcass of the country, right? That are just like profiting. It feels like total like late stage Republic stuff where you just have people picking at the carcass of a great country and using it for the personal profit because it feels like it's going downhill. That's really pessimistic. I'm not saying that's definitely what's happening. I'm saying that's often what I feel like
yeah.
what's happening. And this is a great example of just somebody who's able to just field some like FU money from wealthy donors
yeah.
to launch a perspective or a silly bid that's really not intended to go anywhere, but wastes, you know, $500,000 or whatever in the process because it's nothing to these donors who want to see him talking about crypto on a debate stage.
Yeah. I mean, listen, on the other hand, that's probably why Trump ran too. It was just like a brand building
yeah.
exercise, right?
Yeah.
So, and the president of the United States was another sign of like the perils of our republic. But yeah, the fact that what should be the most serious responsibility of the citizenry, of the, you know, of the public apparatus, of the town square, what should be the most serious function has just turned into this like clown show reality show it's not a great sign. Not a great sign for the future.
Love reality TV. Don't love it in the presidential election.
Yes, correct. Let's go ahead and throw up on the screen where the Republican primary sits today. And then we have some news about our dear leader, Donald Trump. You know, this is looking increasingly difficult for anyone not named Donald Trump to imagine themselves being able to overcome what are a lot of obstacles to their success. Trump in the morning consult tracker is at 57%, Ron DeSantis at 19%, Mike Pence at 7%, Vivek Ramaswamy at 6%. It's a good showing for him. I mean, he's been, I think, really successful at raising his profile in terms of that lane. Nikki Haley at 3%, Tim Scott at 3%, Chris Christie at 2%, Asa Hutchinson on the board at 1%. Sadly, my favorite candidate, Doug Burgum, 0%. Francis Suarez, the aforementioned, 0%. Will Hurd, who just jumped into the race, 0%. And someone else, 1%. And, I mean, listen, it's... The argument for Ron DeSantis was, like, once he gets in the race and he's actually going head-to-head against Donald Trump, things are going to change and he's going to be able to consolidate the vote. And the fact that you now have Donald Trump routinely, not just in this poll, but in a lot of polls, over 50%, it's hard to see how this works out without something that we don't expect happening, which, listen, American politics, you never know.
Well, this is the big difference with 2016, that these numbers, and this was consistent throughout the entire primary, when you looked at those numbers, it was really the other way around. You had Donald Trump, you know, if you put the 5 and 6 for Pence and Haley together with DeSantis's 19%, you're somewhere around 30% in most polls. That was more what Donald Trump had, and the
That's
other people
point.
Were split with that 57%. So you had most Republican primary voters in 2016 voting for someone else. It was just that there was so much spread out between so many different people, and they didn't consolidate in the sort of Pete Klobuchar way that happened with Democrats in 2020.
Right.
They never were able to do that, and so Donald Trump has this clear lane. Now it's the exact opposite of that, where Trump is around 60%, and there's just not, that 30% is not going to be enough unless you really start to really, I mean, it's possible when we think about how there are, you know, you have New Hampshire, you have Iowa, you have South Carolina. People get momentum if, you know, they have a really good ground game in Iowa. Ron DeSantis does have a good ground game in Iowa.
Right.
He wins Iowa. I think Ted Cruz won Iowa. I mean, like, this is, it's not your shoo-in, but that can change momentum. It can change money. It can change the media conversation. So, again, nothing is impossible, but this trajectory where you have Donald Trump sitting that high, not great for anyone else.
It's one thing when you're saying, all right, if I just consolidate everyone who's, like, not even, not anti-Trump, but who's, like, anti-Trump curious, like, interested in, well, let's maybe go in a different direction.
Yeah.
Then I can pull it off. Because you can imagine that, right? You can imagine these other Doug Burgum, Chris Christie, whatever. You can imagine them falling to the wayside and you being able to consolidate that vote. It's a whole different beast when you're talking about, I got to actually take away from people who affirmatively are saying, like, nah, I'm with Trump right now.
Right.
That's a different animal. And I think kind of in a show of force, right now, the Trump operation is moving swiftly to effectively rig the rules of the primary and rejigger the order of the states and whether they're primaries or caucuses in order to best benefit, in their opinion, the former president. Put this up on the screen. Interesting report here from Reuters. They say Trump team lobbying for primary rule changes to boost his 2024 chances. They talk a lot about Nevada in particular, where they want it to be a caucus instead of a primary. Their analysis is that they think caucuses are better for Trump because his people are more committed, so they're more likely to show up. Caucuses obviously lower turnout because it's more effortful than just going and casting your ballot. The DeSantis campaign, they don't necessarily agree with this, though. Emily, they think that because their base, and this to me was an interesting admission, they think because their base is wealthier and higher education, that they'll have more free time to go and show up at a caucus. So they actually aren't sure that this is bad for them, but Trump is also moving to push pro-Trump states earlier in the process so that he can sort of close the door on any of his rivals, Ron DeSantis in particular, early on. And I think there's a couple things to note here. Number one, as I said, show of strength, because Trump does have a lot of loyal allies in a lot of these states. So this is what comes from having been president of the United States, from having this infrastructure sort of like and true believers set up ready to go for you to go to them and say, hey, this is what I want. And they're like, yes, sir, we'll do it. The other thing that I think is interesting, and we had a reporter on that mentioned this as well, is Trump's campaign's previously not known as like a model of organizational glory. You know, 2016 famously was like chewing gum and duct tape, basically. It was less a campaign than sort of a traveling rock concert or something like that. 2020, they had huge issues with, I'm forgetting what was the name of the campaign manager that, like, blew all their money, and, like, that was kind of a mess as well. This time, it seems like they have a more competent campaign team. Like, this is the kind of stuff that a well-oiled political machine is on top of, and they appear to actually be on top of it, much to many people's shock and surprise.
Yeah, and then there's always that question of if that blows back on Donald Trump in any way. I don't know, because consultants can, you know, professional DC True. Consultants can obviously do in questionable decisions, which is what some folks are wondering when it comes to DeSantis right now. But this is the kind of stuff that professional campaigns and the, like, political attorneys know how to do. And if you don't have that, you're obviously always going to be at a disadvantage. It's one of the annoying things about our politics, actually, is that you have to pay money to hire people to sort of do this stuff for you, which is like lobbying for rules changes. It's ridiculous. But it is a sign that, that is definitely a difference between 2016 Trump and 2024 Trump, also 2020 Trump, is that you just didn't have the exact same level of, like, professional politicos attached to the operation. You had Paul Manafort.
Right. Yeah.
So.
And I don't think that anyone would be under an illusion that the consultants who are attached to the Trump campaign are going to, like, be able to rein in Donald Trump.
Right.
Because many have tried. And it just.
Let Trump be Trump.
Yeah, that part is not going to work out. So if they can still, listen, it's not my cup of tea, but there are a lot of people who love Trump's unvarnished, like, he is a legitimately hilarious person, unfortunately, as well. So if he maintains that and they also have an effective organization, listen, again, I think that's going to be pretty tough to beat. Hey, guys, if you like that video, go to BreakingPoints.com, become a premium subscriber, and help us build the best independent media organization on the planet.
That's right. We're subscriber-funded. We're building something new. We want to replace these failing mainstream media organizations.
So again, to subscribe, it's BreakingPoints.com.